Hey, Tom Tilley here. Welcome to the Hack Podcast. Did you hear that Lord's dog died? She's written a letter explaining just how devastating it was. It's even pushed back her album release. Pet grief. Why it hits us so hard on Hack today. Plus, deadly e-cigarettes. The number of Americans dying from vaping has continued to go up. You'll find out why in just a moment. First, to Flemington.
Hack.
The animal welfare movement pickets Melbourne cover vans every year.
Yes, the horses have just come off the turf from the last race of the day. The high heels are digging into the grass as racegoers stumble home or to the next party. The Melbourne Cup is over for another year, and this year came with its own special brand of controversy. 3 weeks ago, the ABC 730 scandal revealed that thousands of ex-race horses have been sent to knackeries and abattoirs. Some high-profile guests and performers pulled out of attending the race. And we've now heard that one of the horses in the Big Melbourne Cup race has a cracked pelvis. To see how this controversy has affected the race, we're crossing to Flemington to ABC Grandstand reporter Daniel Miles. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us. First to the race itself. The big story was an Australian jockey on an Australian horse winning the race.
Hey, Tom, that's exactly right. This year, from a racing perspective at least, it was all about the Aussies defying the internationals. There's been a heap of talk with the Melbourne Cup in years of late of too many internationals coming in and they're taking the glean away from Australia's great race. Well, this year, there was only two Australian-bred horses in the race and one of them won it. Craig Williams, a man who got so close to winning the Melbourne Cup back in 2011. He was aboard Dunedin, the horse that won that year's Cup in all of its lead-up races, but was suspended just before the Melbourne Cup. So got so close, but had that last handle on the Loving Cup taken away from him. He was victorious aboard Vow and Declare, a horse trained by Danny O'Brien, a man whose name would be familiar to a lot of people, A, because of his success on the track, but B, he was embroiled in the Cobalt saga that embroiled racing for a good number of years. He cleared his name through that and has won his first Melbourne Cup, the first cup for Craig Williams, and the first time an Aussie's really come to the fore in what has been an era that's dominated by the internationals.
And the horse that came last in the race, Rostropovich, how do I pronounce it?
It's Rostropovich.
Rostropovich has a suspected cracked pelvis. Still, what's happened there?
Well, we're still getting news filtering out. Essentially what's happened is the horse was assessed by vets straight after the race who found him to be lame in the back legs. We've since heard from stable representatives that the horse has a crack in his pelvis. He's been taken to an equine welfare centre in Werribee where they've got Melbourne University vets looking after him. It just brings back into the spotlight a lot of what we've been seeing throughout the ABC 730 reports and the increasing number of internationals that have sadly died while racing in the Melbourne Cup. Six international gallopers in the last 6 years have died while contesting the race that stops the nation. The good news out of this, if it is a cracked pelvis, that isn't a life-threatening injury from all reports that we've had out. There was a horse who raced in the Cox Plate last week called Kings Will Dream. He fractured his pelvis 12 months ago, was able to recover and go on to race again. And even another horse called Media Puzzle cracked his pelvis back in 2000 and went on 2 years later to win the Melbourne Cup. So as disappointing it is as it is, and our thoughts really go out for the connections, the stable riders, the jockeys, the trainers of this horse, who would have obviously been distraught in finding out that their horse was injured and not able to put any pressure on its back legs. The good news, if there is a silver lining out of this, is that it's not a life-threatening injury.
Has the controversy this year led to a noticeable downturn in betting revenue or attendance?
It's a tricky one to really pinpoint what the downturn has been from. There has been a significant downturn in betting. That's in both the Caulfield Cup and the Cox Plate over the last two big meetings that we've seen here in Melbourne. And attendance-wise, last Saturday they had the Derby, but there was only 80,000 people there. That's a meeting that normally gets in excess of 100,000 people. Wow. But they did suffer through 25 mil of rain throughout the day. So club officials are pointing the finger at the weather gods. What is inescapable, though, is the fact that this saga around equine welfare has really diminished the spring carnival. And I guess rightly so. The the vision of anyone who's seen that 7:30 report, it is quite distressing. As anyone who loves an animal or loves a racehorse, it's something that really cuts deep to the core. Racing in general has tried to respond. Racing Victoria has put $25 million into an equine welfare plan. They've also donated 1% of all prize money going forward is going to be contributing back to that equine welfare plan to ensure that all these horses, once they are finished their days on the track, are able to find second and third homes and another useful life off the track, because we know these magnificent animals, they may race until they're 6, 7, 8 if they're lucky, but they can live well into their 20s and 30s. And it's about ensuring that, you know, once they are done on the track from a racing perspective, that they're able to find another use, another life, and maintain sort of living happy lives.
Yeah, well, Racing Victoria announced a $25 million package, as you touched on there, trying to improve the lives of retired racehorses. I guess it remains to be seen if that stops them from going to the knackeries we saw in the 7:30 report investigation. Great to get your observations and analysis, Daniel. Just lastly, one of the best parts of the Cup for people that don't make it is seeing the photos of all the trash people trying to get home. How's the carnage out there right now?
Well, Tom, the last couple of horses have left the field. From my perspective here, just outside of the mounting yard, things are going okay so far. I haven't seen any ladies in blue dresses pushing police officers into hedges. My stilettos haven't gone too deep into the turf, which is really good, because the last thing I want to do is injure a fetlock on my way home. But yeah, I guess that's almost a sport within a sport. You might have to wait another hour or two to see the real trashy types just stumbling out. But from where I am at the moment, the steward's verdict is all clear.
All right. Thanks so much, Daniel. On the text line, Tommy in Melbourne says, another day, another injured horse. Sick of hearing about it. Time to ban all racing. Someone else says, horse racing is a brutal sport that should be banned. Another listener says, how is a cracked pelvis a problem? Athletes get injured in sport all the time. Another listener, every cup yet another horse is injured. Dr. Liz Walker is on the line. She's the CEO of RSPCA. We just heard about Rostropovich and the suspected cracked pelvis. What do you make of that result?
Well, it's pretty, it's very sad and very concerning. And I guess it's just a reflection of what you were talking about just a minute ago, that there are those inherent risks associated with horse racing, including really significant risks of pain, injury and distress when they're actually racing. So understanding when injuries happen, why they happen, how they can be prevented is one of the challenges that the racing industry is having to face up to now.
Daniel Miles said that generally a cracked pelvis means the horse won't be put down. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, it is my understanding. And I think at the moment the good thing is that the horse received an immediate assessment and pain relief and was transported to the University Veterinary Hospital, where he'll get really tremendous care. So I think we need to let those guys get on with it. If it is a cracked pelvis, I think the prognosis is much better than what horses have suffered in prior years. But I think it does actually, in general, given the discussions around animal welfare in the horse racing industry that we've been having a lot over the last few weeks, it really just talks to the fact that one of the things that I think we should expect as members of the community is that the industry is really clear about what the injuries are, what the rate is, who is being injured, and what can we do to actually mitigate that.
All right, thanks for joining us, Liz.
My pleasure.
That's Dr. Liz Walker from the RSPCA. Paul says on the text line, I bet in the past, and I've won big in the past, but I just don't feel like I can support it anymore. Another listener says, I boycotted watching the races this year. My co-workers who watched at the pub said there were less punters than usual. Australia is turning away from this barbaric sport.
Hack, this loss has been indescribably painful, and a light that was turned on for me has gone out.
On Triple J.
That's part of a statement from Lord. She lost her dog, Pearl. He died of a heart attack, and Lord is so heartbroken that it means pushing back the release of her third album. She's written a letter to her fans explaining how much her dog meant to her. As Shalala Medora reports, it's something many people can relate to.
Pearl came into my life in 2018 and almost immediately changed everything for me.
Kiwi musician Lorde released a statement just a couple of days ago on the passing of her BFF, Pearl.
As anyone who has had the pleasure of raising a dog can understand, my life grew exponentially. Pearl brought an immeasurable amount of joy and purpose into my world.
Lorde said Pearl helped guide her musically, and his loss has been so profound that Lorde has put off releasing her much-anticipated third album.
I often, you know, describe him as somewhat of an Elton John type character. You know, you knew he was a bit of a diva.
3 weeks ago, photographer Jenny McGee lost her beloved cat, Oscar, affectionately known as Bosky.
Bosky was my first. I didn't grow up with pets. I was never really an animal person, but I was a Bosky person.
You can hear just how big an impact Bosky's death has had on Jenny.
He had these amazing big blue eyes. He's a rag doll, so he's a big fluffy boy. And, sorry, it was a bit teary. Yeah, I just didn't realise how special he ended up being to me. He was more than just a cat to me. Family, you know, a soulmate of a kind, I guess.
Bosky became Jenny's first real constant in her life.
I moved around overseas a lot and didn't really form long-term friendships or attachments and, you know, even relationships and partners. And so Bosky was my first real long-term bond that I had. You know, with his passing, it was a loss that I hadn't really sort of experienced before. So I've learned a lot of lessons with him, but also losing him at the same time.
Jenny's story is a bit of a love story, really. When Jenny and her partner decided to move overseas, there was no question that Bosky would go with them. Bosky was her faithful pet for nearly 12 years. Then, about a month ago, Jenny noticed that Bosky wasn't his usual self. She knew deep down that he wasn't going to be around much longer.
He was lying on my chest, and I just basically just looked at him, like begged him, just please just stick around for a bit longer. I need you right now, kind of thing.
They were in the car on the way to the vet clinic when Bosky died.
It was so sudden. As it transpired, like, he was literally in my lap, and that gave me comfort. I've never experienced real grief before, and whilst I'm very lucky, I wasn't prepared for it either.
According to the RSPCA, Australia has one of the highest rates of pet ownership in the world. More than 3 out of 5 of us have a fur baby or an animal buddy of our own. And even the rich and famous are suckers when it comes to their pets.
You have 2 loves in your life. Tell us about the 2 loves of your life.
One is Meredith and one is Olivia, and they are cats.
Nice.
Do you think the cats know that you're Taylor Swift?
Which makes it that much harder to say goodbye to them. Lorde's asking fans to be patient as she overcomes her grief.
This loss has been indescribably painful, and a light that was turned on for me has gone out. When this great loss crystallises inside me and my chest rebuilds around it, hopefully I'll be able to finish up and share it with you.
Jenny's leaning on the people around her for support too. She said heaps of her friends chose to have pets rather than kids, so they relate to her grief.
And especially a lot of, I guess, people in my generation that are having less children and, you know, loving more animals, you know, and that transference. I've been fortunate that no one's really told me to, you know, just get over it or just get another cat.
Jenny's keeping Bosky's ashes nearby and channeling her grief into her art, photography. She's got a couple of projects on the go involving animals, which she said are influenced by her soulmate, Bosky.
I'm seeing the world slightly differently because of him.
Hack. Triple J.
Oh, such a sad story about Bosky. R.I.P. You're listening to Hack. We're talking about losing a pet after Lorde wrote a letter to her fans explaining why her album was late. She's devastated over the loss of Pearl. Yvette, you've lost both your parents and you lost your 7-year-old cat, and that actually hit you harder.
Yeah, it did, actually, Tom. How are you going?
Yeah, good. That sounds really surprising.
Yeah, I know. Look, I have to say, look, it only happened on the 4th of October, and it surprised me because it was so unexpected, and we still don't know 100% what happened to Baxter, but he was found in a neighbour's yard. unresponsive on the morning of the 4th of October. And I have to say, he was my child. We are cats, not kids in our family. And yeah, it is really difficult. And it did hit me harder than the loss of both of my parents. I'm a little bit older than your normal audience members. I've been following the Jays for a very long time. And yeah. I lost my mum when I was 30, and that was 18 years ago. And I lost my dad 2 years ago. And the difference was, in both of those instances, they were not unexpected deaths. Baxter was unexpected. I expected to have him for the next 10 years of my life.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it hit me like unexpectedly. I thought I was pretty good with grief. I thought through my alternative belief system that I was very good with the people and things coming into your life and having a meaning and a purpose. And then when that time is over, that it's time to move on. But this was like a grief that I hadn't expected. The routines, the little things yeah. that are part of your everyday life.
Yeah, you build your life around them, don't you?
Yeah, you really do. And it was the nighttime that's been the hardest for me, the going to bed, the routines of me putting my phone on the bedside table, Baxter getting up off the bed, going down and eating his food and then hopping back up. Little things like that, yeah. which I wouldn't have thought meant anything, mean the world.
I've got an interesting text for you here, Yvette, from Davo. He says, we get betrayed by friends, hurt by family, left by lovers. Only our yep. animals seem to be by our side without intention. No wonder we mourn them when they pass.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with that. Baxter came into my life in a really difficult period where I was having to deal with my father going downhill. And in that 7 years prior to Baxter's death, he was my everything. Yeah. And to have that is kind of a little bit connected to me to a real finalization of a period of my life.
Yeah, it's amazing how much it sort of ties in with your own personal journey and then combine that with the companionship that you talked about, plus the brutal way they often die. When I was 4 years old, I saw my dog fly off the back of a truck and get run over by the car behind us on the way home from the tip. It was pretty intense. So much, so much to take on there. Yvette, thanks so much for sharing your story.
Yeah. That's my pleasure, Tom. You have a good evening. See you later.
You too. Dr. David Foote is a vet, but he's also a grief counsellor for bereaved pet owners. David, why does it hit us so hard?
Well, I think, Tom, your previous guests have alluded to that fairly well. And I suppose the first thing is that the human-animal bond is not the human-human bond. It is unique, and they offer us that unconditional love without conflict, constant availability, touch. So it's a unique bond that can't be replaced, and there's an innocence and a simplicity about it. They don't even know what they're giving us, but they enrich our lives in that unique way. So when they die, the grief that comes with pet bereavement is different to grieving the passing of a human loved one.
So how do you help them through it?
Well, I give them professional counselling support. So I offer them a listening ear for them to ventilate and express and process everything that they need to say and feel. And I validate their experience. A lot of people feel uncomfortable talking to their friends or family about it. It depends on whether their friends and family are good support or not. A lot of people come out with the cliches of it was only a dog and you'll get over it and, buck up or get another dog and all those sorts of things, which are very unhelpful, if not hurtful. So the biggest part of my role is to validate the meaning of their pet in their life, to validate their grief, to explore the relationship with them, to answer any questions they may have. Sometimes my vet's cat goes back on because people may not fully understand why their pets died or what the process was. And I give them an idea of what to expect and some simple strategies for coping. I mean, you can't you can't take grief away. I can't take the grief away, and nor should I, because it's a natural part of our humanity to go through grief when we're hurting, when there's a death of a loved one, be that human or animal.
The key thing that just stood out from what you said to me was about validating the experience, that other people don't often understand what you're going through when you lose a pet, and you feel maybe a little bit embarrassed to bring it up, or maybe to bring it up more than once. I think people are fine to I guess, see some sadness initially, but maybe in the weeks or months later, if you're still feeling it, then it gets harder to talk about, and that's where you need some extra validation that, you know, it's a legitimate feeling.
Well, that's exactly right. And attitudes are changing. So some people do have good support around them. Some aren't. Some are isolated and are really lost. But a lot of people have someone. It might be a partner, a close friend, a family member who can be there for them and listen to them and not try and fix their grief and make them happy again, but just walk beside them. But often people around can get exhausted or lose their tolerance or lose their capacity to keep giving good support. So you're exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of individual variability in how people grieve, but for some people, as it's going on in time, then yes, that's one of the indications for to seek professional support.
Makes me wonder how people feel when they lose a horse, thinking about the racing industry, which we just spoke about a moment ago. I'll go to you, Matt. You've lost two dogs. How have the people around you responded to the grief you've been going through?
Very supportive and that. Everyone sort of understands how close I was to the dogs and just their family and friends were close to them as well. It was just a bit of a shock that to lose them so close. I'm getting up in age, but it was still a bit of a shock.
So how are you trying to work with that feeling of grief?
Well, I've had them both cremated, so I've got them sitting pride and place in the lander, and that sort of that helped immensely. Rather, so I've had to put a couple in the ground, and that's just so hard. But to have them back in the home and cremated is just such a big thing. That's really helped, and I still have the son of one of the ones I had, so I've still got. Okay. Something left.
Yeah, that's a great way to stay connected for sure. Thanks for sharing your story there, Matt. Just lastly to you, Dr. David Foote, Matt mentioned something that I imagine is quite important in dealing with the loss of a pet is how you actually deal with the pet's body.
Well, yes, and different people have different preferences. So some people are happy for their, well, happy isn't the right word, but they're okay with their pet going for mass burial, being collected by the from the vet. Often it's a service facilitated by the council. Some people want to have their pets cremated. I mean, usually the vet is the sort of gatekeeper, I guess. They can store the body if people aren't clear, if it's happened suddenly, it's an unexpected death and they're not sure what they want to do, and that's another thing to do is for them to people to take their time to decide. But a vet can arrange for a range of ways of, I guess, disposing or treating the body that the industry terms aftercare.
Yeah, and I guess that the way that goes about and feeling comfortable with that will be an important part of dealing with the loss of that pet. Dr. David Foote, great to hear about the work that you do helping counsel people through their pet grief. I personally had no idea how involved that process is, but it sounds like you play an important role there. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
That's my pleasure. You're welcome, Tom.
On the text line, I have a rabbit who is paralyzed. She has recovered. We spent hundreds of dollars making her life comfortable. She's our princess. We adore her. Tony in Warburton says, it may sound terrible, but I love and care for my pets more than I do for people. Someone else says, this hits so close to home. I lost my dog 3 years ago and I still miss him. I cry every time I hear Charlie by Mallrat because it reminds me of him.
More than 1,000 cases of severe lung illness linked to vaping.
Three students had to be taken to an emergency room.
I feel like for a lot of people, that's just a chance they're willing to take.
On Triple J.
What do you think of e-cigarettes? Do you think they're dangerous or do you think they're a safer option than cigarettes? Well, there's a worrying situation in the US that's led many people to rethink where they stand on e-ciggies, or vaping, as they call it there. 2 months ago, when we last covered this on the show, there'd been 6 recent vaping deaths in the US. Since then, in the last 2 months, the number of vaping-related deaths has risen to 37. 37 deaths related to vaping in the US in the last few months. So let's find out what's going on. We have Dr. Ween from the senior, she's a senior postdoctoral researcher at the Lung Research Laboratory at Royal Adelaide Hospital. 37 deaths in 3 months, more than 1,800 vaping-related illnesses. How concerning is this?
I think it's really quite concerning. I mean, we know that smoking kills, and this is the first sort of, you know, any kind of reports that we'd had that vaping could kill. But I think it's important to distinguish the fact that these cases are not necessarily linked with what we would consider just regular everyday vaping. It does appear to be some sort of contaminant that has gotten into perhaps counterfeit products rather than regular vaping products. So that is a distinction we do have to make.
And are all these deaths related to THC products? Because the US Centre for Disease Control and Prevention has warned people not to buy any products containing THC. So that seems to be a major problem here.
Yeah, so about 80 to 85% of the cases have been linked with THC, but it is important to note that about 10 to 15% haven't used THC, and that's a pretty easy thing for them to prove one way or the other. I'm sure these cases in the hospital, they have taken blood samples, so they would be able to test that pretty easily.
So have there been many other deaths before? Like, has this 37 come out of nowhere, or are we only just paying attention now? And if they are just all quite recently, does that sort of bolster that theory of a bad batch?
Yeah, so it's one of those things where I think because people weren't so aware of it until we had this sort of crisis in the US, people weren't necessarily looking for it. And clinicians are now starting to go back and look through their files and finding cases that kind of match the same sort of symptoms. But it's not been anywhere near the numbers that we've seen over the last few months. There definitely has been some sort of surge, which they're not quite sure what that is to do with yet. But yeah, it's definitely a bit of a new additional thing rather than the regular issues that they've seen over the last few years.
Have we seen anything like that here in Australia?
We have had one case, I believe, in Queensland that was not the same as this, but there was serious lung implications that they did think was associated with vaping. But that's the only one I've sort of heard about so far, and that was a couple of years ago.
In September, Donald Trump announced a ban on flavoured vapes, the type that often appeal to kids. Has that ban come into force?
I don't think it's come into force yet, and it's not something that's necessarily new. I know he does love to take credit for things. This is something that the FDA has actually been working on for about 6 to 12 months, and they were discussing at the big American Thoracic meeting earlier this year. So it has been on the table. I think just the crisis over there has really sort of brought it into the forefront of the attention, and it's getting, you know, a bit more traction than it had earlier.
And there's so much debate about how dangerous it is. We are about to hit the news, but very quickly, Miranda, what is the breadth of research saying on how dangerous vaping is compared to regular smoking?
Yeah, so I think most of the studies have been short-term studies where they've only sort of done sort of a day exposure or a few puffs exposure or things like that, where it has looked like it is less dangerous than smoking. But we do have a brand new study that came out a couple of weeks ago that did show that mice who were exposed to it for a year, 25% of them actually did develop lung cancer within 4 years. So we are now starting to see some sign of not just sort of, you know, short-term toxicity that the body might be able to deal with, but we're now starting to see potential signs of long-term effects, which is quite worrying.
So still a lot of important research to do.
Yeah, we just need the funding now.
Okay. All right, Miranda Ween, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries.
Dr. Ween's a senior postdoctoral researcher at the Lung Research Laboratory at the Royal Adelaide Hospital. A really interesting one to keep an eye on, what's happening with vaping in the US with a surge of deaths there in the last 3 months. And we'll keep an eye on any major breakthroughs in that space.
Hack on Triple J.
All right, that was it for the radio show today. Plenty of sad texts coming through about people's pets. One person says, my dog Jackie Boy is my best mate and is so faithful. I'll be devastated the day I lose him. So many people writing in about their pets. Really connected this topic. Another listener says, a beautiful little puppy rescued from a terrible situation walked up to me one day out of her litter. And ever since, she went everywhere with me. Work, parties, the pub. Earlier this year, she was poisoned and I've never been so crushed. I've lost the best part of me. It's amazing how they die in such brutal ways. That can be part of the pain a lot of the time. Thank you so much for listening to the podcasts. I'll catch you on the next one.